John Muir said that when we try to pick something up by itself, we find that it's hitched to everything else. And that's what today we're talking about, is that interconnection between everything, really. Networks of grace. This is our fifth week in our series, so we're winding down here. Next week is our last. And if you're just joining us, this is a series based on The Hope, A Guide to Sacred Activism by Andrew Harvey. So we've been using that book in our small study groups, and some people individually have been reading along and using the discussion questions that are in the bulletin each week. We really, you know, when we begin to think about this interdependence and interconnectedness, especially in our Western culture where it's been, you know, the culture of the rugged individualist, right? You know, the go west young man, you know, sort of chant that brought people to California, that sort of that idea of autonomy is a big part of our national identity. And yet we are finding in these times how important it is for us to turn more and more and more toward the collaborative spirit, toward the recognition that we all belong to each other, that we are interconnected. And as John Muir says, you can't pick anything up by itself. You can't have anybody really totally solo, because we are always connected to spirit, to nature, to all life, to each other, and then directly to the things that we choose to be a part of in small groups or large groups or communities like this one. There was a man who had not been going regularly to his church, his spiritual community, and it was noticed by his pastor, and after a few weeks of his absence, the pastor came knocking at his door. I promise I won't do this. And when he was greeted, there was a nice blazing fire in the hearth. And so the pastor came in and said not a word and just sat down in the chair opposite the man, and they both faced the fire. And after some time, the pastor went up and took the fire tongs and took one of the burning embers out, and he put it to the side of the fireplace and just quietly sat back down and watched how that ember turned from that fiery orange into a duller and duller color until it went cold completely. And then after he let it just sit there and be cold and alone on the side, he went back and he picked up that ember and he put it back in the center of the fire. And of course it warmed up again and it came together with the other coals and became part of the blaze. And then he said, well, I need to get going now. So the man ushers him to the door, and when he turns to say goodbye, the man has tears streaming down his face. And he says, Pastor, that is the best and most fiery sermon you've ever given. And I will be back in church on Sunday. So there is that sense of, you know, our passion too. We've talked a lot about passion throughout this series. And yet our passion cannot be just solo, because we burn ourselves out with that, don't we? We grow cold and feel alone with that. And so there is this constant reminder that we are all connected. And who better to show us how connected we are than indigenous cultures? Because they really, really get this. And so I want to draw a bit on the work of Sobhonfu Sumé, who is part of the Dagari tribe in West Africa. And she actually takes up residence in Sacramento and back in West Africa. When she goes to West Africa, she just goes to be with her family and her community, her tribe there. She doesn't have anything to teach, because all of her teachings and her books are about teaching the West about her culture and how we need these teachings to remind us of our interconnectedness, of our interdependence, of our need for each other, and how much better we are when we're together. Something interesting she says about her culture and her tribe is that nobody in the tribe needs solitude. And I thought that was a really interesting concept. I mean, I'm somebody who really values solitude, and I'm sure there are many people here today that do as well. And so I was beginning to think about, well, so what's different there? And then she talks about how so much of the community is about helping the individual to be exactly who they are as a unique soul. And so many of the rituals they do, even before birth, support this idea. So when a mother wants to have a child, she goes out into nature in the Dogari tribe and she listens for the song of the soul. When she learns the song of that individual soul who wants to come in, she comes back and teaches it to her husband. And when they make love, they sing the song of the soul. The whole tribe learns the song of the soul, and there are rituals that happen during what they call spiritual pregnancy, even before conception, and then once the woman is pregnant. Now, everybody in the community knows the song of the soul, and they maybe even sing to the woman's belly the song, so that they're letting the soul know that they recognize it, and they recognize his or her purpose. This is also an important part of the Dogari tribe. Once a woman is pregnant, there is another ritual that happens where the elders all gather in the same place, and the woman is put into a trance so that the elders can communicate directly with the child, the baby that is yet to be born. And they perceive through their rituals and are able to communicate with that baby and learn what that baby's purpose is. What is that soul's purpose of incarnating in this lifetime at this time? And so they also are preparing the community, so they want to hear so that they can create a conducive atmosphere for that particular child, that particular soul, to fulfill their purpose. And so the mother then is told once she comes out of the trance what they learned about the baby's purpose. They may have heard a name, and the mother may have also heard a name too, so they kind of compare notes and decide on the baby's name. And so the whole community now is celebrating and cheering for this soul, the importance of this, the gifts that the soul will bring into their community, and the naming of the soul. Imagine how important the soul must feel before they're even born. When the day of the birth comes in the birthing room are only the women of the tribe, and of course the midwife at the head of that, but on the other side of the wall are the children who are 5 years old and younger. And only those children are invited because those are the children who are believed to remember more of where they have come from. And so those children listen very carefully for the first cry of the baby. And as soon as they hear the first cry of the baby, they mimic the cry just as they heard it. And this is so the soul knows that they have arrived in the right place. And Sobhonfu Somme says, when a child does not get this welcome, there's a wounding in the soul because that soul, that psyche, thinks that they're alone. And she said, and when that happens, sometimes later in the community, there will be acts of anger or violence. So this ritual is very important. Imagine if we wove these rituals into our lives, what a wider and more grace-filled network we would create. And I wonder how much we would feel loneliness or how much we would need solitude if we were really seen and known for who we are from the moment we arrived and actually even before. And everybody would celebrate you just as you are. Everybody in your community, here in this spiritual community, and your families and your groups of friends at your work, everybody would know your soul song. And at times when you needed to be reminded of who you are, they would sing it to you. Or in times of celebration, as the tribe does, so when there's a graduation or a coming of age or a wedding or a child is born or even a memorial service happens, you know, in those stages of life, that soul, the whole community is singing that soul's particular song. And even when somebody forgets who they are and does something that isn't considered productive, maybe commits a crime, the whole tribe can sing that soul song to them to remind them of who they are, because that's what, you know, why they've gone off track and done something, some sort of bad behavior, if you will, because they forgot who they were. So of course, the correction for that would be to remind you through affirmation and through the song that brought you here, your particular gifts, your particular qualities and purpose. You know, we're of course connected, interconnected, not only to each other, human to human, and to God, to spirit that permeates the universe, and that presence that we talk about every week, that there is that only that one presence and that one power, that all-loving goodness. We know we're connected to that. But we forget, don't we? We forget that we're connected to the grass and the trees and the flowers and the insects and one another. And the people whose opinions we don't agree with, it's hard for us to always remember we're connected with them too. But yet, what do we know from our teachings? That this divine spirit, this Christ spirit that we have is the same in all of us, right? That is the oneness. What's different is the soul expression, the individuality. And in the Dogari tribe and with us too, in our teachings in unity, we celebrate both. We celebrate the unique expression that each of us is that makes for a diverse fabric of a community. And we also celebrate that one spirit that we all share. So when you think about all the species and all the interconnections, I mean, it just becomes this whole miraculous web. So I love that Andrew Harvey calls this chapter that we're working with this week, Networks of Grace. I was thinking about years ago when I lived in Missouri and I had a beagle named Hazel. Her nickname was the Hairy Mystic. And it was really because she showed how plugged in she was to an otherworldliness often. But one day I remember specifically she was in the back of the yard and she was barking like crazy. And I went back there to find a little baby bunny. And so I carried that little baby bunny to the front yard under a place, a tree in the front that I thought it might be safe under. And all through the day, there was yet another barking and yet another bunny. And so by the last one was the fifth bunny, and she barked that bunny all the way to the fence, and it slipped out underneath by itself and joined its brothers and sisters at the other tree. But one of the things that I noticed about this was that each bunny was so unique in the way that it reacted. So one bunny sat, it's like it sort of hunkered down in my hands and then it sat really still. And then the next bunny tried to squirm out and was really active. And the next one was like the drama queen of the whole crew. I mean, she screeched and all kinds of noises and she's just nutty with me holding her. And then the final one was very stoic and silent and still, almost like a statue. So all those bunnies, what I also noticed about them was each one had the same white mark on its forehead, as if it was this great collection of all this unique expression, and yet that one mark of belonging, like I belong to the same family. And so this is the beauty of these networks, of these groupings, of communities like ours, is that there is that both and. That sense of there is a sense of belonging. We just had a week of Unity Basics and several people really taking it very a serious look, a deep reflective look at if they wanted to move into membership and what that meant to them, which to me says a lot about where people are holding the significance of what groups they want to fully step into and commit to. So I really appreciated that deep reflection that several of our new members took before they filled out the paperwork to move ahead. So there's this interconnection, this interspecies connection. You know, when I went back to see the little nest where the bunnies were, it was, you know, this whole ecosystem had been built for that nest. There were pine needles and leaves and all kinds of living beings that had come together to create that space where birth happened and perhaps near death happened, or at least harm, with my dog. But then it took me as a human to bring that sometimes human intelligence, to bring that paradigm in, to change what could have been hurtful into a useful, a helpful scenario. And this is kind of how our networks work, how our groups can work, that we help each other. And when we maybe go astray or we're causing harm or we might be about to cause harm to ourselves or to others, somebody else in the network comes in. Somebody else in the group comes in and helps us to learn to move again, to remember who we are, to sing that soul song in some way, to affirm that person's truth and worth in some way. So they, oh, yes, now I remember who I am. Now I remember why I'm here. Now I remember my namesake, my purpose, my gifts. And we also then know that if our namesake, our purpose, our gifts are removed from a community, that there is a great void there. If we never step in fully to who we are, our purpose, our gifts, there's a void in the universe. And so it behooves us to look and maybe have ritual for ourselves, to listen for our own soul song. After I learned about the Dogari ways. I did that once, is to just sit in nature and let a soul song come to me that was my own soul song. And then we had a women's retreat where we encouraged all the women to do that, and we all learned songs and made drums and sang our soul songs. So it's, you know, you can incorporate these rituals in any way that it feeds you, that it works for you, to bring you home to yourself again, to bring you home into that network of grace, those communities that you say, I am an authentic participant in this community. This is a community that matches for me. Or even making choices of, this one doesn't work for me anymore. So I think I mentioned to some of you that when I was at the Shift Network conference, I said it on Sunday morning, that I had been a part of a group around Indigenous healing and racial healing, and I was really hopeful that we would come together again. And there were several attempts by our leader before we finally met by phone on Friday. And that gathering really reminded me of how these networks of grace start. So there's one small group that's come together there. And there were just a few of us on the phone representing different or from different racial backgrounds or even national backgrounds with different networks. And so each of us had different things to share about ways that we could plug into this idea. Some said, well, I'm part of this group. And so as this group finishes this work, I think some of them could help with this kind of ritual, or, you know, and so there was that kind of conversation. So you see how all the networks happen. I think a lot of times we don't think about how networked we are, how connected we are. And not only connected in this realm, in this world, in this above ground world, but did you know about all the interconnectedness that happens beneath the earth? Science has been showing and learning about all this networking that happens between plants and trees with their roots. So trees will have this fungal network that helps them have a communication from one tree to the next. It helps connect their roots. And they do all kinds of communicating with one another through this. At one of the studies is from University of British Columbia, and the woman Suzanne Simard studied specifically Douglas fir trees and paper birch trees. And what she found with these particular trees was that they use that network to communicate with each other and to help each other. And so the seedlings of their trees that were in too much shade, they would store up some of their carbon and give more carbon to those seedlings that weren't getting enough sun so that they could survive and thrive. And they also will forewarn each other when something happens. So one plant, if it's infected with aphids, can send out a warning signal to the plants next to it so that they can buoy up their immune systems by sending out whatever substances they send out so that the aphids know that they are not welcome. I am just fascinated by this because I've noticed this in my own garden, that some plants have the aphids on them and some don't, of the same species right next to each other. Now I know there's this network of communication going on. They'll tell each other when there's a harmful fungus, and the plants will be able to help themselves stay strong. All of that going on underneath the earth. Isn't it miraculous? And then right here with us, there's a lot of miracle happening, isn't there? A lot of things we don't always see or call out or notice or even think about ourselves, what a network we are a part of, a network of grace, a network for the greater good. That just by walking upon this earth with good intention of meeting and greeting people with kindness and with love, that alone can send out a whole network of positivity that who knows does what for who, but it's only good. Makes people feel better, uplifts people, even a smile. And then even more than that, we have these groups, these small groups that gather. You know, in a community like ours, where we have over 500 members and 200 plus coming on a Sunday, plus the online folks and the children and so on, we have a large community. And so you may not always feel like, well, this is my spiritual home and this is my generalized community. But a big reason why we have small groups is so that you can have that kind of really deeper connection, family connection. That's part of what the Hope groups have been about this season of service together, but also connecting, you know, sharing the spiritual path together. And my hope for the hope groups is that some of them will stay together or combine or deepen their work. Andrew Harvey suggests that these groups that we create are 6 to 12 people, which we've already done, and that we organize maybe around heartbreak or maybe around passion or around profession. For us, it could be around certain spiritual teachings, unity teachings, or particular service projects, or both. And so then we get to know each other on a more intimate level. It's like a small family that takes care of each other, right? You know what's going on in each other's lives. You know when you need support. You know when there's a cause for celebration. And so there is an extended family within this whole network of grace. So that's the idea that we will continue to put out before you, is opportunities to create small groups so that you can really be in these kind of small cells. Imaginal cells is one of the things that Andrew Harvey talks about, referring back to a story with Deepak Chopra, that there's imaginal cells working together, multiplying the good. That was in reference to a caterpillar making its transformation. You can read all about it in the Hope. You know, and Margaret Mead, the world's best known anthropologist, said, "Never doubt that a small group of committed citizens can make a difference. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has." So those small groups, because, and I think a big part of it is because those small groups know each other and support each other and connect with each other, that there is the best of us coming forward, right? Just like in the Dogari tribe, where they know each other and they support each other and they know each other's gifts and purpose and namesake, there is a kind of support for somebody to be the best they could possibly be. And that's the idea of these small groups that are then networked in larger ways. Sometimes ways we don't even know. We have a group, for example, here that it comes together. We have two groups that come together and pack lunches for the homeless. And so this is just one example of so many. You heard earlier about the Hope group that's going to be doing the Prisoners Literature Project. Lots of ways that we give to the larger community. But I think it's so beautiful that James does this also in his home with his family, with his young adult sons who participate in that. So what a great experience that they have. Even though they may not come to this church regularly, they're part of this small cell that is networked to us, a part of the network of grace, of unity. And there are many, many more, countless. If you're looking for a group, there's no doubt you can find one here through a class or through service. There's plenty of ways to volunteer or to get together in a study group and to study something together, to pray together, to make a prayer group or a mastermind group. In my former church, I knew of a mastermind group that had been together for 35 years, every week praying together. And that's the kind of solidity that you can create of community, that really you know that these folks have your back, so to speak, and can move forward together in whatever it is that you may be up to. In networks, June Holly says, she's a part of Joanna Macy's work, who's an ecologist. If you want to get involved in ecology, there is an endless way to get involved with the work that reconnects with Joanna Macy. Just go to joannamacy.com and join a network, and then off you go. But June Holly says that in networks, everyone is a leader. Everyone is encouraged to collaborate and to initiate collaborative action in their group. And so leadership isn't concentrated, but instead its power is distributed throughout the group. So that's also another aspect of the ways that our networks can grow, is out of sort of this grassroots kind of effort. It's not about concentrating around one or two leaders, but sharing leadership, sharing gifts. By the way, that study and those plants, that network, scientists have come up with a fun name for it. They call it the Wood Wide Web. You know, there are so many ways that we touch each other's lives and that we are reminded of how connected we are with each other that we don't necessarily think about too often. But and ways that we do a kindness and we don't even know how that kindness had a ripple effect and what it created. I've talked to you before, shared a little bit before from Father Gregory Boyle's work. He has Homeboy Industries in Los Angeles, and he's also a Catholic priest. And he tells a story in his book, Tattoos on the Heart. He tells great stories in that book, by the way, But one of them is about Speedy, one of the homies, he calls him. And these are both homeboys and homegirls, gang members who his work through Homeboy Industries has helped get them training and jobs and connection and a sense of family. Well, Speedy was one of the kids, about 17, that came to see Father Boyle one day. And all of the kids call him G, call Father Boyle G. So Speedy comes and he says, "Hey, G," he goes, "I got to talk to you for a minute." He said, "You know, some days I don't know whether I want to live or die." And G's getting ready to do mass, and he's already late, he says. And so he's putting on his vestments, and he's trying to find his scriptures. And he says, "Look, for now, this is going to have to do, I care whether you live or die. We're going to have to talk more later." So Speedy goes off, and Father Boyle does his mass. And later, Speedy comes back to his office, and he says, "You're not going to like what I have to say, but hear me out." And so he wasn't going to like what he had to say because Speedy had done something very dangerous. He had gone into enemy gang territory because he had a crush on a girl who lived over in that area, and he wanted to walk her home. And so he walked her home, and 8 gang members from the rival gang came out, and they don't call him Speedy for nothing, so he ran. And Father Boyle says this is about 5 years before the guns would have been available to gangs. And so at that time, all they had was things to throw at him, like, you know, cans of beer and, you know, rocks and things like that. So Speedy got away. And he was just coming back into safe territory, and he runs into a woman named Yolanda from Dolores Mission, which is the Catholic church that they're all a part of. But Speedy doesn't remember ever meeting this woman. And Yolanda says, "I see where you've come from, and I want you to know that if anything ever happened to you, it would break my heart in two." And Speedy's like, "I don't even know this woman. What is she talking about?" And so she says, "I've seen you. I've seen how you play with your nephew in the park. You're a good uncle. And I've seen how you participate in our homeless program here at church. You have a heart of service." And she repeated it again, just so he'd be clear. "If anything ever happened to you, it would break my heart in two." So he's telling G about this, and he says, "That really hit me, you know, G?" And Father Boyle says, not too long after that, Speedy married the love of his life, his childhood sweetheart. He got a job up in an oil refinery in Richmond, and he had 3 children, a daughter and 2 sons, and he began to thrive. In every way, he got promotions. He came to see Father Boyle, and he took him out to dinner. And as they were talking about his job and his promotion and so on, Father Boyle said, what do you all do for fun? He said, "Well, on my day off, which is Sunday, we go to Mass. And afterwards, I take the kids to Cafe Mimi, and they can order whatever they want. And then we go to Barnes & Noble," and he goes, "everybody goes to their own corners and reads their own books for 2 hours. He said, "You know, I'm too cheap to buy them books. So they can come back the next week and pick it up where they left off." But he said one day all the kids just begged and pleaded for him to buy the Harry Potter book. And so he did. And he said, "You know what we do now, G?" He said, "In the evening we turn off the television and we read Harry Potter." He said, "My oldest daughter, she can read a whole page. And the next son, he can read about a paragraph. And the baby, well, the baby struggles to get through a sentence, but we all help." And he said, "And I just shut my eyes and I lean back in my recliner and I listen as a page and a paragraph and a sentence is read by my children together." He couldn't have ever imagined that life. And one person, maybe two, Father Boyle, but that one encounter with somebody who he didn't even think he knew. A woman who cared enough to tell him how much she cared put him in a whole different direction. And now he's created a healthy family and a healthy work environment, and another network of grace is born out of that. We never know. And so we just keep our eyes and our ears and our hearts and our minds and our spirits open to be in constant interconnected community. And then to make really deliberate choices, to be in these small groups working together for the good of all, whatever causes arise in our hearts, whatever makes us feel good about making a difference, whatever passions or heartbreaks, as Andrew Harvey would put it, lead us to those places. And we trust then that there is a hidden network, just like beneath the ground there is between these trees, and that hidden network is constantly sending out communication that helps each other so that we can all thrive. You know, we're part now in this world of that critical mass that I remember years ago always reading about, the critical mass tipping the scales. It seems like now it's really critical that the critical mass tipped the scales, you know? And we are. And we are. That's the hope. We are. That's the faith that I know in my heart, that we are. We are tipping into the good. We are bringing forth the greater good for all, co-creating the kind of world we want to see, and letting dissolve those old structures that don't work for us anymore. Martin Luther King said, "We are caught in an inseparable network of mutuality, tied to a single garment of destiny. And what happens to one directly happens to all of us indirectly. We are forever connected in one web. And that's the truth of who we are. Let's not forget it again." Shall we have an affirmation together? Together, 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 we create a cosmic network of grace. And so it is.